Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, Fighting Blindness is hosting the Retina International World Congress in Dublin this week, which will bring together doctors, scientists and people with vision impairments from around the world. Amongst the speakers is an extraordinary Irish-American man called Paul Boskind. He is a Tony Award-winning Broadway producer, a psychologist, an entrepreneur and an LGBTQ activist, and he joins me now in the studio. I'm also joined by Professor David Keegan, who's a genetic eye specialist at the Mater Hospital and a member of Fighting Blindness. And it's lovely to have you both with us today. But Paul, I'm going to start with you, because you were diagnosed with something called Stargardt disease, I know, at the age of just 21, when you were a young and ambitious university student. So how was that news? I'm sure it was very difficult for you to hear at that point in your life.
Yes, it was difficult to hear. I knew I had problems seeing like other people. I went to an ophthalmologist who referred me to other eye specialists. And then finally, after a number of encounters with eye specialists, I was informed that I had Stargardt's and that it's central vision loss. So it explained why I was having trouble reading the phone book at the time, or why I could not see in my microbiology lab in the microscope what other students were seeing. And I was told that I was going to go blind. And I remember asking, "You mean like pitch black, dark, can't see anything blind?" And the ophthalmologist said, "Yes." Whew, deep breath. Mm-hmm. And I said, and when will this happen? And he said, "Well, we don't really know for sure, but you'll be the first to know."
Well, that didn't sound like a very sensitive consultation.
Exactly, it wasn't. And I got no referrals for support or, "Here, you need to see a psychologist or a counselor." He left the room and I was dumbfounded.
Mm-hmm. And so, what happened after that then, in terms of your eyesight?
The eyesight, I was legally blind at the time. I was using low vision aids and I was in undergrad, but I was floundering. I had changed my major 7 times and had changed 3 different universities. Truth be known, I think I was running from my own sexual orientation. I'm a gay man. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening was I decided to get my act together. After a while of being pretty sad and depressed with that prognosis, and so I hustled up and finished my undergraduate degree and then got accepted into a master's program in clinical psychology in the San Antonio area where I'm from. And then I subsequently was accepted at Hofstra University in the New York City area to get my doctorate degree in clinical and school psychology. So I'm a licensed psychologist and have gone on to build a really large private practice where I employ close to 500 clinicians who work for me as W-2 salaried folks.
Mm-hmm. So you had a hugely successful career despite what happened in that room with that prognosis. You also have an Irish castle, which I really want to touch on as well. Tell us how that happened.
Well, I did 23andMe genetic testing and was shocked to find out that I'm predominantly Irish. Boskind is a good German-Dutch name. And I knew on my paternal side that my grandfather spoke German, as did my grandmother. Now, I'd never met them because I was born after they were around. But it's on my mom's side that I have the Irish heritage. And so when you discover that you're Irish, what do?
Come to Ireland.
You got it. So my husband and I at the time came to Ireland and we stayed in castles, we looked at castles, and dadgummit if I didn't open my mouth to the driver one morning and said, "Are any of these castles for sale?"
As you do. It's
kind of the way I think as a businessman and as an investor in real estate. And so I ended up buying a castle.
How's that gone for you?
It has gone beautifully. 6 years ago, it's a 6-story tower house. and it was rubble at the time. And so I love creative outlets and projects. And so it was my focus. And I would come to Ireland ongoing, regularly, to interface with the design and with the contractors and the architects and the engineers. And it was, I was in my element.
Well, you're one of our own. Now, let's come back to the eyes, David. And thank you very much for being with us as well. Can you tell us a little bit about this condition, Stargardt disease? What is it?
Right. Well, thank you for having me on with Paul this morning. This is it's great to hear Paul's story. And before I talk about Stargardt's in particular, just reflecting on Paul's story, and I'd love to say it's a very unique story that Paul has just told for Paul's sake and for the listeners, but it's an all too familiar story, particularly going back 20, 30, 35 years of that lack of knowledge around genetic eye disease or rare eye conditions and a shrug of the shoulders mentality that was often proffered. And this has been backed up then by clear research about the delay in getting a diagnosis for years, 5, 6, 7, 10 years in getting a diagnosis, even a clinical diagnosis, seeing multiple medical practitioners with different levels of advice, and then not being referred on for the proper support services.
Mm-hmm.
Patients can understand that there might be some active disease modifying treatment or cure available. But what's very hard to explain, is why you don't get support with that. We've got support services here through Fighting Blindness, through Vision Ireland, Guide Dogs for the Blind, Child Vision if it's for children. They need to be referred on to the right services so that they can be supported to live an independent, full life.
But those referrals are happening now. Please tell me they are.
They're happening now. They are.
But not all the time necessarily, right?
Not all the time, but not in all countries.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have it. So we've built a network in Ireland over the last 8 years, collaboration with Fighting Blindness, with Belfast Trust, my own hospital, Mater Hospital, the Ioneer Hospital, to create that infrastructure. We've then linked with Fighting Blindness and with Vision Ireland and with a key appointments thing called an eye clinic liaison officer. Now that coordinates that access to psychological and supportive rehab care. We've transferred that care as well for the vision impaired and blind, which is predominantly age related in many years for macular degeneration, to a life cycle model. So there's a specific program for children. Many children with disabilities will be seen mainly in child vision. Children without disabilities with vision impairment will be seen through the Vision Ireland program. But then right the way up through school, college, working. One of our key goals across all of this is improving the employment opportunities for those with vision impairment and blindness. A shocking statistic from a couple of years ago, 16% of severe vision impaired or blind in the working age population were in paid employment. Now, we've risen that up to, won't go into, it's not for today, but that's risen up to around 24, 25%.
But still very low.
Still very, very low. Mm-hmm. It's not acceptable.
So people who are diagnosed with genetic conditions like Stargardt's now, are there treatments available?
The first step is getting a diagnosis. So now what we've made strides in is getting a genetic diagnosis. So we know, so I'd say in Paul's case, exactly what it is. So Paul went in with poor vision, lack of central vision, retained peripheral vision. So that was the first mistake. So
that's
Paul
right.
will never lose his peripheral vision with Stargardt's disease.
Oh, I can tell you otherwise.
It's narrowed down, but it's not fully lost. It's not going to go to black.
I hope that it doesn't, but I'm not certain about that. It's hard to trust what I was told once. And in the last 6+ years, my vision has deteriorated significantly to where it's very difficult. It's grueling. It's painful to have to cope and learn to adapt or keep adapting. And going from my place in New York City to my place in Ireland here, if I hadn't been here in a few months, I notice some huge changes that I wouldn't otherwise. Way back, I was driving up until 12 years ago. I was driving a car. I was legally blind, but in the state of Texas, they allowed me to get a note from my ophthalmologist and then prove to them, even though I couldn't read the eye chart, I took the driving test and I passed with flying colors. So I was driving until I remember coming back from New York to San Antonio and got in the car and realized everything is so distorted and blurry this is not working like it did just a few months ago. Mm-hmm. But in New York, you don't drive. You subways, trains, and you hail a taxi. In San Antonio, you have to drive to get around. I drove around the block, pulled in my driveway, turned off the ignition, and said, Paul, you're done. This is it.
Right.
You're not going to drive anymore. And giving up that independence is quite a struggle. But I did it. I made the right decision.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that you're noticing a deterioration in your eyesight as you go along. And in the back of your mind, you have that consultant saying to you, you will be totally blind at some point.
That's right. And I can't trust, sorry, David, that it won't go to the periphery, because I remember seeing a retinal specialist who said, oh, it's spread to the periphery. And I thought in my head, she doesn't know what she's talking about. It never goes to the periphery, just like David, you just said. But it does, and it can. And I don't know how far into the periphery it'll go. Mm-hmm. I don't trust what I used to know as factual.
Yeah,
And it's different for every individual.
Absolutely, and it's your lived experience. So in terms of research then into these conditions, David, what's happening on that front, and how are we in Ireland when it comes to clinical trials?
First off, there's a lot happening in the research front, but understanding the disease, it's iterative. We think we understand the disease, and then we bring some treatments to clinical trial. They don't work. We've got to go back and understand the disease a bit more. The great mistake around Stargardt's disease, it's the commonest named condition in a group of rare conditions. Mm-hmm. So the sense, whenever it's a common condition that it's easier to fix, it's a very difficult nut to crack in Stargardt's disease. That's why I started off talking about the value and the importance of support services. A lot of research, a lot of different approaches have been tried in treatments for Stargardt's disease, from gene therapy, cell replacement treatment, special compounds that people will ingest, and other compounds that will be injected inside the eye to try and protect that level of vision. I think the first breakthrough will not be so much reversing cells that have been lost and damaged as a result, but maintaining what people have. And I think Paul's really touched on that with the severe form of Stargardt's disease that can sort of go in, but it still won't take all of it out, but to hold on to what people have.
Stop the progression.
And we have a little bit of a battle in having merit attached to stopping the progression in the eyes of advancing clinic medicines, getting the medicines approved and then getting them paid for. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of a battle that we have on our hands, but we can learn from other spaces like cystic fibrosis. You know, when they arrest the progression of the deterioration of patients' health, that's a valid argument to go and get those drugs paid for.
Absolutely.
We're looking for the same argument.
Absolutely. So fighting blindness then over the course of the next number of days, this international conference is happening. What is the aim of that?
Well, the aim of conference, like a lot of conferences, we bring patients like Paul and advocates together with clinicians, scientists, industry and regulators. We had a very important meeting yesterday of all those stakeholders to advance our knowledge, create collaborations, try and find breakthroughs for new drugs, but also set up clinical trials. So I just came from a meeting in my own hospital this morning about a clinical trial and a new drug for inherited retinal degeneration, not Stargardt's disease in this case, but for a different type of inherited retinal degeneration. That grows our infrastructure, grows our expertise in this country, and it brings those treatments closer to Irish patients and American Irish patients.
There you go.
Paul, I was reading that over COVID you started to record your life experiences on your phone with a view to having it all compiled into a book. So what's happening on that front? Because given what we've heard so far today, it's one that I'm sure we'd all enjoy reading.
Well, thank you for saying that. The compilation of stories, I didn't know how to put them all together, and it didn't start off as though this is going to be a book, but it is. I have a publisher and an editor, and the book is called The Blind Man Game, a memoir of art, activism, and adaptation. The art part refers to the fact that I'm a bit of an art collector. I have Warhols and Picasso and Keith Haring's. I had a friend recently say, well, how can you see art? And I said, I'm drawn to colors. I can see enough to know I like this painting, and I can acquire it. The other side of the art is that I'm a Tony Award-winning Broadway producer. So I've produced theater on Broadway, gay-themed shows that had tremendous impact on the audience members. And through that process, I've learned with my vision loss as of late that I have to sit on the front row, and even then I can't really see what's going on stage. But we now have what is called audio description, meaning I can put in my ear the headphones and someone is describing what is going on stage. The first time I experienced that, I had tears rolling down my face. I was like, oh my God, this works. This can work. When I can't see what I'd like to see, with the descriptions, it fills in all the blanks.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it speaks to what you were saying, David, earlier about the supports for people who have visual impairment. It's so important. And I know that you have before emphasized the importance of the smartphone in all of this. Can you tell me what difference that has made for your patients, firstly?
It's usually, I think Paul answered that, but it was the number one low vision assistance device. We surveyed all our patients, 50% said the number one low vision assistance device was a smartphone.
I use the iPhone regularly. That is my computer, meaning I get text messages and emails, and I dictate responses, but I listen to emails. So it's as opposed to trying, I have a little monocle, which is like a jeweler's lens on my left eye, and I have to stick the iPhone up to my nose. And so I know I look a little geeky when I'm looking at my phone, but that's just the lay of the land. Mm-hmm. But I also remember feeling geeky when I had to pull out what I call the blind boy cane. I was embarrassed and ashamed to have to use that mobility cane to get around. And I would fold it up before I went into my condo lobby in New York City because I didn't want the doorman and other residents in my building to see me with it. I got over that, finally did. But there really was a sense of I'm letting people know that I'm blind, that I have a disability, that I'm visually impaired.
Yes. Yeah, and that can be difficult for you to accept. Now, I want to tell people about the conference because you can get all of the details on fightingblindness.ie. You'll both be speaking at the Retina International World Congress. It's a public engagement day hosted by Fighting Blindness. It's all in the Dublin Royal Convention Centre on Saturday. It's one of the biggest global gatherings of eye researchers this year. It's going to be live streamed, and it offers a rare opportunity for people with a vision impairment to hear about the very latest advancements in treatment and cures. And once again, for full details, please visit fightingblindness.ie. And Paul and David, I'm very grateful to you both for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Tesco Club Card gives you the power to lower prices. Get any 3 for €10 and over 30 products from our Firepit range, like Tesco Firepit Quarter Pounder Beef Burgers, 454 gram. Top it off with Charleville Red Cheddar Slices was €3.50, now €2.50. Add some fizz with Fanta Orange 12-pack was €11.75, now €6.50. Save time, shop online or click and collect. Tesco. Every little helps. Products subject to availability. Prices vary in express stores. Deposit may apply. See tesco.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, plenty more to come in the next hour of the programme. We'll be hearing about the very sordid details about Hunter Biden's life as a crack cocaine addict, which have emerged during his trial in the United States. Marion McKeown will have the very latest on that. And Charlie Weston on the interest rate cut that we're expecting this lunchtime. Also, today marks 80 years since D-Day, and historian Dermot Ferriter will take us through what happened at that time and how it is remembered now. Let's go to the newsroom and to Brian Jennings.